So we are on text 34 of chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita. For almost two or three Saturdays, we have been just discussing this one important verse, because that describes not only the need for accepting a bona fide spiritual master, but also describes how to approach one, and after that, what one should do having approached a bona fide spiritual master. We have discussed at length all the individual elements of the first half of this verse. Tadvitti is one part, pranipatena is the other part, pariprashnena, and then sevaya. We have discussed all these elements separately. And we just started discussing the second half of the shloka. As we have discussed before, the first half deals with the disciple and the second half deals with the spiritual master. So we have seen also, Hare Krishna. So we have seen that the spiritual master must be accepted in the bona fide disciplic succession. It is not a matter of sentimentally accepting someone, but rather of very philosophically understanding the whole position. One should not accept a spiritual master out of fashion or out of some sentiment. Neither should one look at the external charisma or the personality of a certain person. Rather, one should try to understand the philosophical principles that go behind it. A spiritual master, as we have seen, is one who is a transparent via medium between us and the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. He is like a postman. He is simply delivering the message without changing the essential principles. And with his realization, he adapts this knowledge to the present circumstances. A guru is a representative of God, although he is never to be considered God himself. But because he is representing God, so therefore he is awarded great respect. What is the relationship between the guru and the shishya? The guru's responsibility is to give divine knowledge to the shishya or the disciple, to guide the disciple to negotiate the turbulent waters of this material existence with the eyes of Shastra, and ultimately to enable the disciple to cross over the ocean of material existence and reach the spiritual abode of Lord Krishna by becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. The disciple, on the other hand, has a duty to question submissively, hear attentively, and serve faithfully. Then all knowledge will be revealed in the heart of the sincere disciple. The process by which an aspiring sadhaka or an aspirant for spiritual life accepts a spiritual master is called diksha, initiation. Initiation means to begin something. So at the time of diksha, it is only that the spiritual life begins. Divyam jnanam yato dadyat kuryat papasya sankshayam tasma dikshayati sa prokta deshikas tattva kovidah. The shastras explain that those who are wise, kovida, and who are experienced in understanding matters of the absolute truth, understand that the process by which divine knowledge is transmitted from the guru to the shishya is called diksha. Divyam jnanam yato dadyat. When that dadyat means to give, when this divya jnana, transcendental knowledge, is given, that is diksha. Also the explanation is kuryat papasya sankshayam. By the process of diksha, all the sins of the disciple are destroyed. So it is not that it is some magical ceremony that one sits in the yajna and then the sins are destroyed. The sins are destroyed by the process of receiving that spiritual knowledge and practicing in one's life. It is not simply a mechanical procedure of sitting in a fire sacrifice, getting a new name, and then one is free from all sin. No. One must accept in spirit. The process of diksha has been compared by Sanatana Goswami to a process of converting bell metal into gold. In the olden days, the ancient Vedic scientists, they understood the process of alchemy. Does anyone know what is alchemy? Alchemy, yes? Yes, very correct. The process of transforming lower metals to higher metals, baser metals to higher quality metals. So by the process of alchemy, there were the Vedic scientists who could convert bell metal, calcium, cas, you know, bell metal, into gold by the addition of some mercury and some combination. This was known even before. And actually, if you, for those of you who have been students of science, if you add the two, you will get the same, the atomic numbers and atomic, the details that are given of the two, you will ultimately get gold. It is amazing. So one, it means that these Vedic scientists knew much more than our modern chemical engineers or chemists, because they were able to produce gold from lower metals. So Sanatana Goswami says that just as the alchemists used to do this, similarly, a person who may be born in a low class family, he may be a chandal, that is born in a family of dog eaters, or he may be of any particular lower birth, so-called lower birth, but by the process of diksha, by the process of accepting divine knowledge from a spiritual master coming in the disciplic succession, he can get transformed into a Vaishnava. So a Vaishnava is compared to gold, and the original Shishya from his lower birth is compared to bell metal. So by the process of diksha, a low-born person with many bad qualities will get transformed. He gets elevated to a saintly Vaishnava. Therefore, one should never consider a devotee of the Lord from a material point of view. One should not think, oh, this is a Vaishnava from a lower caste, or this is a Vaishnava who is a Brahman, this is a Vaishnava who is rich, this is a Vaishnava who is poor, this is a Vaishnava who is very literate, this is a Vaishnava who is illiterate. One should consider all Vaishnavas to be very dear to the Lord. These material designations are not important. In fact, they could be harmful for our spiritual life. So we discussed briefly that by the process of diksha, the disciple now gets a second birth. The Vedas become his new mother, and the spiritual master becomes a new father, and therefore the new name is given. So he is called now Dvija, Dvija, one who has taken a second birth. In this way, the aspirant who is seeking perfection of spiritual life has now seriously begun the journey back to Godhead. Before that, he was simply preparing for that initiation. And now, having become initiated, his preparations have become more serious now. So here, Lord Krishna has explained in the verse, Upadekshyanti te jnanam. Upadekshyanti. So the word Upadekshyanti means diksha. It is revealed, the process is given. Jnaninas tattva darshinaha. Because the spiritual masters have perceived the truth, understood the truth, realized the truth. Knowing the truth is a matter of realization. Different grades of realization may be there. In spiritual life, one may go higher and higher and higher and higher in spiritual realization. God is unlimited. So there is no limit to how much we can realize God. Just like the sky is unlimited, there is no extent to which how a bird can fly higher and higher and higher. The bird is limited by its own capacity to fly, not by the limitation of the sky. If the bird had more strength, it could have flown higher and higher still, because the sky is vast, unlimited. Similarly, the understanding of God is vast and unlimited. And according to one's own realization, one can go higher and higher and higher and higher. But still, God is so great that we cannot understand Him completely. So therefore, one who has understood the truth of Krishna, he can become a guru. And he reveals this knowledge to the world at large. So we will conclude this most important verse here now, and we move on to the next verse, which is also very important, which gives the result of accepting such transcendental knowledge from a spiritual master. Text number 4.34 began with Tadviddhi, that knowledge, understanding that knowledge, that transcendental knowledge. So now, what is the result or the fruit of accepting this transcendental knowledge will be explained in the next verse. Actually, not just in the next verse, but all in the next 3.5 verses. So let us discuss text 35. So kindly repeat after me. Yajñātvā na punarmoham evam yāsyasi pāṇḍava yena bhūtānyaśeṣāṇi drakṣasyātmanyatho mayi. Srila Prabhupada, having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Kindly repeat. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never again, I beg your pardon, you will never fall again into such illusion, for by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme. Or in other words, that they are mine. So here Lord Krishna is describing yajñātvā, that having understood this spiritual knowledge from a bona fide spiritual master, what will happen? Na punar moham yasyasi, you will never again fall into illusion. Moha means illusion. So one of the results of obtaining transcendental knowledge is that you will never come under illusion again. Illusion means that which is not true, which is false. This is called maya. Maya. Ma means that which is not, and ya means this. So maya means that which actually does not exist, which is not true. So at this moment, all the conditioned living entities in this material world are in the grip of illusion or maya. Therefore, they are unable to understand the truth of life. But having approached a spiritual master, one can come out of this illusion. So what is the truth? We have understood the truth now. So what is that truth? That is explained here, yena bhutani asheshani drakshasyatmanya athomayi. He says, bhutani asheshani. Bhutani means the living beings. Asheshani means the countless, innumerable, all the living beings. So one will see by dint of this spiritual knowledge, yena bhutani sheshani drakshasi, one will see. What will one see? Atmani. That all these jivas, all these living entities are part of the Supreme. They are part and parcel of the Supreme. Atha omai. In other words, they are mine. They are in me, Lord Krishna says. Mai. So this is the truth. So in simple words, when one approaches a bona fide spiritual master and one obtains transcendental knowledge from him, the first thing one understands is that I am not this body, I am the spirit soul, and Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I am but a part and parcel of that Supreme Personality, and therefore my duty is to serve him. Very simple. This is the basic knowledge, the basic fundamental truth that one understands when one approaches a bona fide spiritual master. The entire Vedic knowledge can be summarized into just three steps. The first step is called Sambandha. Sambandha means to understand, first of all, our own identity, the identity of God, and the relationship between these two identities. So what is the first identity? Who am I? I am the soul. I am the Atma. Who is the second identity? The Supreme Lord. Who is the Supreme Lord? Lord Krishna. And what is the relationship, Sambandha, between this identity and that identity? It is a relationship of service and love. Because the first identity, that is the Atma, is eternally a part and parcel of that Supreme Identity, Lord Krishna. So this is called Sambandha. So this Sambandha knowledge is awakened to start with when one accepts a spiritual master, divine knowledge comes. But that is not the end of it. One has understood that one is not the body, one is the soul. One has understood that Lord Krishna is God and that we are part and parcel of God. The next step is that we must act according to that relationship, according to that Sambandha. If we do not act according to that Sambandha, then what is the value or the meaning of that Sambandha? In a family, for example, there are so many relationships. There is a relationship of a father and son, husband and wife, brother and sister. So many relationships may be there. If a father doesn't act as a father towards the son, then what is the meaning of that relationship of being a father and son? So there must be action according to that relationship. So the Sambandha or the relationship is established between the jiva, the living entity, and God. But now there must be action according to that relationship. And that action is called Abhidheya. That is the second step of Vedic knowledge. That we must act according to that. What is that action? What is the action that the part must do towards the whole? Service. The part must serve the whole. So Abhidheya is a process by which the individual living entity serves the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. Service, seva, devotional service. That is Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga, Yoga means to link, Bhakti means out of devotion. So Bhakti Yoga means the process of linking with the Supreme Lord by loving service to the Lord. So service is a via medium. It is a connection between the living entity and God. It is a connection by which the living entity regains his original relationship with the Lord. So this is called Abhidheya. Then having acted according to this Abhidheya, there must be some fruit, isn't it? There must be some result to this action. For every action, there is some result. That is how you judge the action. by its result, phalena parichiyate. You understand an action or a karma by the fruits, the result of that action. Suppose there is a student, he has never studied the whole year. So you will understand by the result, isn't it? So when the result comes, you will understand whether he or she has studied or not studied. So for everything we do, eventually there will be a result. We are striving for some result. Without some objective, nobody does anything. Nobody is supposed to just aimlessly do things. We all have to have an aim in life. So all right, we have understood the sambandha. Now we are doing the abhidheya. We are practicing this service to God. So the action is service to God. So should there be a result of that or not? Should there be some phala, some fruit? What is that fruit? What is that result which you will get by serving God? Love of God. You will get pure love, true love. That is called prema, bhakti. So when one serves the Lord, that is called abhidheya, then one gets the third step. That is called prayojana. Prayojana means the ultimate objective, the goal, the fruit, the result of our actions. So therefore, sambandha, abhidheya, prayojana. These are the three steps of Vedic knowledge. This is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained all Vedic knowledge. So here we are hearing the process of sambandha as a beginning of divine knowledge. It is not the end. The end is pure love. All knowledge must eventually be transformed into love. Otherwise, that knowledge is not of much value. In this way, Lord Krishna has explained the truth that comes by accepting diksha from a bona fide spiritual master. Any sense of separateness from Krishna is called maya. The truth is that we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are connected to Him eternally, eternal connection. But when we feel that there is no connection, when we start feeling that we are separate, independent from God, that I have nothing to do with God, who is God, where is God, that is called maya. The connection is an eternal truth. But ignorance of that eternal connection is called maya. False, illusion, dream, svapna. There are many people who in this way deny this connection. They say, well, who is Krishna after all? Krishna is just a personality who appeared some thousands of years ago. He just came. He was a politician, he was a diplomat, he was a warrior, he was this, he was that. So why should we say we have some connection with him? Some people are forgetful in this way. Other people are forgetful of our relationship and connection with Krishna in another way. They will say, well, Krishna is not God. He is the God means the eternal prakash, the Brahma Jyoti, that is spread all over, the impersonal nirakar. That is the absolute truth. But they don't understand what Krishna clearly says in the Gita, that this impersonal Brahma Jyoti is nothing but the effulgence that is coming from the divine body of Lord Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishthaham. I am the basis of the impersonal effulgence, my dear Arjuna. The Mayavadi philosophers are forever trying to negate the personality of Krishna. Because they have experience of this world where something that expands into something, it loses its original identity. So they think that because Krishna is expanding himself into so many, therefore he will lose his original identity. Krishna is the source of not only all the jivatmas, that is all of us, he is also the source of all the demigods, who are also jivatmas. He is also the source of all the material and spiritual worlds. He is even the source of all the innumerable avatars. The avatars are countless in number, and Lord Krishna is the original source of all of them. So can you imagine one person is expanding into so many things? The jivas are tiny parts and parcels. What is the size of the soul? Does anyone know? From second chapter of Gita? 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. So the jiva is very small. But how many jivas are there? Countless. So even though every individual jiva is very small, but there are countless souls. So if someone has to expand himself and create countless souls like this, and not only that, he has to expand himself into all the avatars who are countless also, then by this experience of this world, we may start thinking, then there will be nothing left of Krishna. Because he has expanded. How can you have Krishna left at the end of it? Just like, suppose you have this pillar. What is this pillar made up of? Stone. So suppose we break this pillar down and we crush all the stones and disperse the dust everywhere, then will the pillar be left? Can you call it a pillar? It is no longer a pillar. So in this material world, we have experience that if you take an object and you make it into fragments and disperse those fragments, then the original object loses its identity, isn't it? You take a sheet of paper, tear it into small bits. So does it remain, that original sheet of paper, does that remain? It's lost. What do you have in its place? Small bits of paper. So therefore, using this logic of our experience in this world, the Mayavadi philosophers say, if Lord Krishna is God, and he has expanded himself into all the jivas, all the avatars, etc., then that means there must be nothing left at the end of it. Krishna will lose his identity. But they don't understand spiritual mathematics. All of us have studied mathematics in school and college. 1 + 1 is how much? And 1 - 1 is? You should be confident when you say, don't hesitate. 1 + 1 is 2, and 1 - 1, 0. But do you know what is a spiritual arithmetic? 1 + 1 is 1, and 1 - 1 is 1. 1 - 1 does not become 0. Krishna or God can never become 0. This is how Prabhupada explains. He said this is spiritual arithmetic. Om Purnamadah Purnam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. The Ishopanishad says that Om Purnamadam, that Supreme Lord, He is Purnam, complete and perfect. Purnam Adaha, this creation is also perfect. Purnat Purnam Udachyate, from that original Purnam, who is God, Purnam Udachyate, many other complete parts are coming, many other Purna parts are coming out. Purnat Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Avashishyate. And even though from that original Purna Supreme Lord, so many Purnas are emanating, still that original Purna remains Purna. See, isn't it wonderful? Can you experience anything like this in this world? No. Even when we exert ourselves all day, we feel we have lost something. We feel so tired. We feel the need to replenish ourselves with food and drink and rest. So when we expend energy, we feel we have lost something. We are not the same person as before. Before we were energetic. Now we have lost that energy. It needs to be replenished. But for Krishna, it is not like that. He can go on expending his energy, go on expanding, and he remains the complete whole, complete perfection. This is God. And sometimes the Mayavadis say that someone who expands like this, he will lose his personality, his identity. No. Therefore, in the 9th chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Matsthani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu avasthitah. He says, maya tatam idam sarvam. He says, I have expanded and pervaded through the entire creation. And jagat avyakta murtina, I am avyakta murti. So how does one understand this? You see, Lord Krishna is not visible to the ordinary person. He is visible only to the self-realized soul who has pure devotion for Him. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santah sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundarma chinta guna swarupam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Brahmaji explains that when one has applied the ointment of pure bhakti to one's eyes, with those spiritual eyes, divya chakshu, then one can see God as He is. One can see God within the heart and one can see God outside of oneself. But normally, the average person does not have this devotion, so he cannot see. Krishna is not visible with these gross senses which are impure. Atah Shri Krishna Namadi na bhaved grahyam indriyai sevon mukhe hijivvado svayam eva spuratyadaha. The Puranas explain that one cannot understand the holy name of Krishna, the holy form of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, the abode of Krishna and so on by grahya indriyai. Grahya means gross, material. Indriya means the senses. One cannot understand God and everything connected to God by our gross senses. But one can understand by spiritualizing the senses. Seva unmukhehi jivvado svayam eva spuratyadaha. When one engages in the devotional service of the Lord, that purifies the senses. The spiritual senses are awakened. Spuratyadaha. And then from within the heart, God reveals Himself. This is the process. So therefore, the process of understanding God and seeing God is a process of devotional service. So others, although they cannot see God, even though He is everywhere, because He is everywhere and yet can't be seen by the gross senses, Krishna says, avyakta murtina. I can't be seen by everyone. So one may think that if Lord Krishna has pervaded Himself everywhere, maya tatam jagat sarvam, He is everywhere, then how can He have His identity? So therefore Krishna says, na cha aham teshu avasthitah. It is true that everything is in me. All living beings are my part and parcel. But He says, I am still aloof. I am not in them. Do not think that because everything is in me, everything is coming from me, therefore I lose my identity. No. I remain the original Supreme Person, Krishna. That is my eternal identity. So in this way, Lord Krishna is explaining here in this verse to Arjuna and through Arjuna to all of us that we are all His parts and parcels. We belong to Him. Part means that I am smaller than Krishna. I am tiny. I am not the whole. I am a part. Very tiny part. Insignificant speck. Therefore, I am Anu, an atomic part of Krishna. Krishna is Vibhu, unlimited, unlimitedly great. So the word part and parcel is very important. Srila Prabhupada translates this as that the jiva is part and parcel of Krishna. So why doesn't Prabhupada simply say that the jiva is part of God? Part of God means you are small, Krishna is big, that is sufficient. So what is the significance of the word parcel? It is same in quality but distinct in identity. That even though the jiva is part of God, but he still has his separate identity. The jiva has separate identity, Krishna also has separate identity. And at the same time, there is no separateness between the two. the jiva is still not separate from Krishna. He is still part of Krishna, but his identity is separate. This is the significance of the phrase that the Atma is part and parcel of God. The Mayavadis say, I am God, you are God, we are all God. But the devotees, they just add, being very intelligent, the devotees add just one apostrophe and S after the God. So, what does it change to? From I am God, what does it change? I am God's. That means what? I am God's property. I belong to God. I am not God. I am the property of God. It makes a lot of difference, isn't it? Just putting one apostrophe and S changes the whole meaning. So I belong to God. I am somebody else's property. Even I am not my own property. We are very proud of being owners of so many things. Of our clothes, of our money, of our house and family members. But these things don't belong to us. Then we may think, well, at least my body belongs to me. No, even a body doesn't belong to us. Then we may say, well, at least the Atma is me, it belongs to me. No, even the Atma is the property of God. Because we are part of God. The part cannot have individual, separate proprietorship. So part and parcel. One time, there was a devotee who was going somewhere. And he met this innocent person who was being guided by a Mayavadi. You know what is a Mayavadi? A Mayavadi means a person who believes that all the jivas are God. That there is no difference between the jiva and God. He doesn't believe that God has a form that is eternal. He believes that God's form is also a form of Maya, just like our body. He believes that God, when he descends into this world, has a material body like our body. He believes that ultimately God is impersonal. He is just light. So this innocent person wanted to understand God. Unfortunately for him, he encountered this Mayavadi. So the Mayavadi told him, you chant this mantra, Soham, Soham, Soham. What is the meaning of this Soham? Saha Aham. Saha means him. Who is that him? God. They don't like to talk about God by his name. They will say he. Doesn't God have a name? Why don't you call him by his name? If somebody just always talks to you as he and it, will you not be offended? So they say, Saha Aham. I am he. So I am God. So that is their mantra. The mantra of the Mayavadis is, I am him. I am God. So they don't believe that Jiva is part and parcel of God. They believe Jiva is God. So this man, innocent man, because he was guided like that, so he was chanting, Soham, 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 Soham. So the devotee came along. He said, oh, this poor fellow, he is chanting Soham, so bad. He will lose his devotional. So he said, but devotees are very intelligent, they know what to add. No? So he said, you are chanting Soham, it is fine, but before this Soham, you just add a Da. So what does it become? Dasoham, Dasoham, Dasoham. What is the meaning of Das? Servant. So Dasoham, Dasoham. So I am the servant, I am the servant, I am the servant of God. So the devotee was very happy. Now he is chanting the right thing. So then this man was chanting Dasoham, Dasoham, Dasoham. Then after a few days, this Mayavadi man happened to come across the same way. So he saw, Are, he is chanting Dasoham. You are not Das, you are God. You are the Supreme. So don't chant this Dasoham. But anyway, the Mayavadi was very intelligent also. So he said, before this Dasoham, just add a Sa. Just add Sa. What does it become? Sada Soham. Sada Soham. Sada Soham. Sada means always. So I am always him. I am always him. I am always God. And then he went away. So this poor fellow, so he was chanting Sada Soham, Sada Soham, Sada Soham. After a few days, the devotee came again and he saw, he's chanting Sada Soham, Sada Soham. He said, my dear friend, Sada Soham is all right. Just again add a Da before that. What does it become? Daso Dasoham, Daso Dasoham. That means I am the servant of the servant of God. I am the servant of the servant of God. So this is always a conflict between the devotees and the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis say, I am God. And the devotees say, we are always a servant of the servant of God. This is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught. He has explained, Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasanu Dasaha. That I am the servant of the servant of the Lord and Master of the Gopis, that is Lord Krishna. In this way, Lord Krishna has explained a very, very important principle here, a principle that the individual jiva is part and parcel of God, constitutionally one in quality, but different in quantity. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained this philosophy as being achintya bheda abheda tattva. Achintya means inconceivable. Cannot imagine. Bheda means difference. Abheda means no difference. Tattva means truth. So according to this principle, the Atma or the individual living entity is simultaneously one with God and different from God. He is one in what sense? In quality. Just like a gold ring is the same as the gold mine. In quality, this is also gold, that is also gold. But the jiva is different in quantity. The gold ring is just a small thing, only so much gold is there, few milligrams of gold. But the gold mine has many thousands of tons of gold. So there's such a great difference. So although the jivatma is same in quality with the Supreme Lord, but in quantity is very tiny. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained this philosophy as achintya bheda abheda tattva. The Mayavadi's philosophy is called Advaita, Advaitavad. Vad means philosophy or point of view. Advaita, Dvaita means dual, different, two. Advaita means not two, we are one. So the Mayavadis say, we are one, the jiva is one with God. So we agree that jiva is one with God, but we additionally say that the jiva is also separate from God. So this philosophical point is very, very important for all of us to understand very, very clearly. So what is the duty of the part towards the whole? It is a duty of service. When that service is forgotten, then there is problem. Every living entity has a purpose in life. What is that purpose? That purpose is to revive that loving service to God. When that purpose is forgotten, then the jivas are forced to accept various material bodies in this universe. Some become demigods. Some have to accept the body of an animal, some of a bird, some of a human being, and so much variety is there in this material world. But these varieties pertain to the body. The body is simply an external covering for the soul. The difference that we see in variety among the bodies are not real. This variegatedness is false. Because the body is simply an external covering. A bona fide spiritual master, one understands that the differences that one sees in this material world are simply a product of maya, of illusion. That underlying the external covering of the body, there is a unity. What is that unity? That all these parts and parcels, jivatmas, are essentially meant to serve Krishna.
They are all the same. And having understood this, he becomes peaceful. He becomes wise. In the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna has explained, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapakecha Pandita Samadarshinaha. He says, one who is a real Pandit, he sees Samadarshina, he sees everything equally. He sees a humble sage, he sees an elephant, a cow, a dog, a dog eater, he sees them all with equal vision. This means that even though he understands that there are varieties, there is a horse, there is a cat, there is a dog, there is a Brahman, there is a Shudra, there is a Chandal, all appear different. But he understands that these differences are only external. They are false differences. That underlying these false external differences, there is a unity. That all these living entities are Jivatma. And they are all part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. This is real Vidya. So this is the knowledge that is to be obtained when one is connected to the parampara. Therefore, service of the part to the whole is essentially the function of the Jivatma. Out of envy, however, the individual living entity does not want to serve the Lord. He wants to accept service. But accepting service is the job of the whole, not of the part. One time, many years ago, I attended a lecture of a Mayavadi sannyasi, and the title of his lecture was You Are the Whole. WHOLE, You Are the Whole. And I had gone to distribute books. I had got our Prabhupada's books and I had gone to the auditorium. It was held in a very A-class auditorium. Air-conditioned, big auditorium with many people, many visitors had come from the elite section of society. And this person was speaking very forcefully for almost an hour, very difficult to hear all his philosophies. He was condemning the philosophy of bhakti. And the gist of his talk was that you are the whole, you are God, don't think you are tiny. He said, everybody in this world is telling you that you are insignificant. But the Vedas are telling you that you are great. Not only great, you are the greatest. How long will you be the greatest? There was a great boxer many years ago. And he had his song called I Am the Greatest. Do you know what is his name? Muhammad Ali, great boxer in America. So many songs were written about him that he is the greatest. That he stings like a bee and floats like a butterfly. There were many songs like that about him. So everywhere he went, before the fight, after the fight, any time, if any press reporter came, he would say, I am the greatest. But what happened? Today that greatest has got Parkinson's disease. He cannot even walk. His entire body is trembling and shaking. He cannot even coordinate the movements of his fingers properly, shaking all the time. So, who is the greatest? If we are the greatest, why are we subjected to such a humiliating condition? How can the greatest come under Maya? Can God come under Maya, under illusion? Can anything be greater than God? If anything is greater than God, then that greater thing must be God then. Because God by definition means who is the most powerful. So, how can we be the whole? How can we be the greatest? It is simple logic. So in this way, there is much unfortunate spreading of wrong ideas in philosophy going on. But in the Bhagavad Gita, if you understand it as it is very simple. That we are the part and we are meant to serve the whole. We should never become envious and think, why should I serve? In Hitopadesha, there is a little story of the different parts of the body. One time, the hand, the fingers, the ears, the nose, and they all got together in a secret meeting, and they had planned a conspiracy against the stomach. They were all very envious of the stomach. Why? They started saying, the finger said, see, I am doing so much work. I sometimes lift the pen to write, or fingers to move the computer or typewriter, and when the time comes to eat food, I have to make all the food carefully and have to put in the mouth. So much hard work I am doing. The leg started saying, I also have to work so hard. Every time I go from here to there, I have to engage my muscles. In this way, everyone started speaking his own, glorifying his own service. The ear started saying, see, I am hearing so much. And then the conclusion was, but the stomach, they are sitting peacefully and enjoying. We are doing all the work and he is just receiving the food and sitting back and enjoying. So we must teach this stomach a lesson. We must call him here and present our demand to him. Otherwise we will do dharna. So they called the stomach. Stomach came, yes, what can I do for you? Why you have called me? He said, we are all working very hard and you are simply sitting and enjoying. So we have decided that from today, if you also do not work like us, then we are going to have hands down strike. We will also not work anymore. The stomach started laughing. He said, you do whatever you like. So then he said, okay. The finger did not move, leg did not move, the ears did not hear, the eye did not see, the tongue refused to move. So many problems. Then finally, because of all these organs not being able to function, no food went into the body. Because the food did not go in, there was no energy. Then the finger started realizing, now even if I want to move, I cannot move. There is no energy left. The leg started thinking, oh, even if I want to move, I cannot move. Then slowly all the organs came to their senses and they realized, yes, our position is to serve the whole. We must simply serve the body. We must simply serve the stomach. The stomach's function is to accept, and the stomach is doing the most important function of digesting the food and converting it into energy by which I am able to function. Then all of them came to their senses and they began to cooperatively serve the whole body. So similarly, God does not need our service. He is self-sufficient. He is perfect in his own place. But we need to serve God for our own survival, for our own happiness, for our own peace, for our own benefit. So the living entities, out of envy, don't want to serve. They want to be served. But when we actually serve God, this is the position of greatest intelligence. The servant is actually the happiest. He is more happy than the master. Have you seen in the house? The servant has no headache. That is why nowadays people prefer salaried job. No headache. You go get fixed some at the end of the month and come peaceful. But the boss, so much anxiety. He has to see that the business will come into profit, that he can pay all the wages, so many things. So being servant is actually the happiest position. And being servant of the greatest boss, the best boss, is Lord Krishna, is the happiest position of all. So we should, with our full heart and soul, dedicate ourselves to the service of Lord Krishna and to the service of his devotees, and then we will experience real happiness in life. That is the sum and substance and the purport of today's verse. Yajnyatvana punar moham evam yasasi pandava yena bhutani sheshani drakshasyatmanyathomai. We will read the translation of this verse again. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. So we will end on this note, this verse. Next time we will start with text 36. These are also very nice verses coming up, 36, 37 till the end of the chapter. So we will discuss that next time. Now there is darshan. We will see the beautiful forms of their lordships. on the altar, and after that we will have questions and answers, and then there will be prasadam. Hare Krishna. The question is that the word dvija was used in the lecture, and there are three meanings of the word dvija. Dvija, twice born. One is for a Brahman who has got diksha. The second is for the teeth, because as you know, children have first milk teeth, right? They lose their teeth, get new teeth, dvija. And the third is for a bird. A bird is also called dvija. Why? Because its first birth is within the egg, and after the egg is hatched, then there is a second birth. So therefore bird is also called dvija. Well, these are the three categories generally.
Then you have to voluntarily perform some austerities.
Yes.
And also he says in Bhagavad Gita that the jivas, living entities, are struggling with the material nature. So the capacity to sustain the suffering differs from one individual jiva to another individual jiva. So if so much due to his past karmas, the burden on him is in such a way he cannot control his senses and mind, then at that time every moment his mind disturbs him. He wants to do devotional service, let's say, but every moment his mind disturbs him. And then how, you know, in what way he can come out of the situation? No way that it's very true that he should control his senses, that's all right. But how should he handle the situation? If he wants to control the mind, he is unable to do that, then what should he do?
This is everybody's story in this material world. Every single jiva. Otherwise we would not be here. We are here because we have forgotten that we are part and parcel of the Lord. Now we have revived that knowledge, and we are in the process of becoming all right again. So it takes time. Depending on how diseased or injured a person is, his recovery will take that much time. So similarly, depending on the extent of forgetfulness of a particular individual, to what extent he has been involved in so many different bad karmas in the past, to that extent it will take little longer. It may be a little more troublesome. But if one is faithful, sincere and determined on this path of devotional service, then surely success will be achieved very soon. And also please note that in the path of bhakti, what is austerity you have to do? It is chanting, dancing, feasting, enjoying. The process of bhakti is very enjoyable. Here we are not asked to go to the Himalayas. We are not asked to take sannyas. We are not asked to stand on our head or sleep on a bed of nails. We are not asked to do all kinds of such vigorous austerities that many other people are required to do. We have a very simple life. The only austerities we do is we get up early in the morning, we have to chant our 16 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra at least, we have to follow four regulative principles. So from standard of Kali Yuga, these appear very big austerities. But actually if you compare with previous ages, this was a bare minimum that any ordinary person was expected to do. So there's not much austerity. So whatever arrangements God has made for us, we should accept that and practice the principles of Krishna consciousness very faithfully and have faith that He will relieve us from the difficulties that we are experiencing, even in controlling the mind, controlling the senses. But we must be faithful and determined, then everything will come. Any other question? Yes.
I have two questions, sir.
Yes.
Why we are comparing ourselves with that of Mayavadi's views?
Why are we comparing ourselves with the views of Mayavadis? We are not comparing, we are contrasting. It is very important to know the truth. What is the truth? Because this philosophy is very, very prevalent nowadays. Wherever you go, so many spiritual satsangs are organized by so many institutions and swamis and other people. So for the sake of protecting the truth, we have to also say what is not the truth. Both things have to be said, so that we clearly understand and we are cautious. So the next time we hear, we will be careful. Yes, even though it may sound very attractive, the speaker may be very charismatic and so on, but it is not to be heard because this is not the truth. The truth is that we are eternally part and parcel of the Lord. We are not the Lord. And what is the second question?
In the lecture you said that an ordinary man cannot see Lord Krishna. But sir, a perfect devotee can only see him. Do you have seen him, sir?
Since I am only an ordinary man, less than ordinary man, so where is the question? But nevertheless, Prabhupada explained this, that what is the point in asking such questions? If I were to say yes, will you believe me? If I say yes, will you believe me?
Yes, sir. Yes,
you will believe. That is not correct. You should not simply sentimentally believe because I say something. Tomorrow somebody else says yes, you will believe him. And then you will follow him.
But sir, I have believed in you, sir.
Why?
That's why I have come here.
We are meeting first time. So how you can have faith in somebody seeing him first time? That is not correct. You must take your time to develop faith. So if we are going to have faith on the basis of sentiment, then that faith will change very soon. And tomorrow somebody will say, I have seen God, and you will believe him. And then you will follow him. He may take you to some other place, some other philosophy he may give you. So even if I say yes and you believe, how will you know whether I am speaking the truth or not? You must understand the knowledge, you must understand the philosophy. Then you must understand the symptoms and then see whether this person is speaking the truth or not. And once you have that much knowledge, you will not need to ask such a question. So therefore, rather, we should ask the question, what will it take for me to be able to understand God? That is the more important question. Alright? It is not important whether such and such person is seeing God or such and such person is not seeing God. But God is very merciful, so he has come in the form of his deity, Murti. So we saw the very beautiful form. So we can all see God in this form and we can satisfy our eyes. Okay? Any other question? And there will be prasadam. Please help yourself to prasadam.